Episode 33, we think, of the Perth
podcast. Yay! We think.
Yeah. 33, probably. We should check that at some point. Let's go with it. Episode 33 of the Perth podcast. We're back.
Again.
Yeah. Where did we go?
Where did time go? That's just one of the questions.
Working permanently, working, family, painting, the usual stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a strange man in the office, by the way. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, I know. I'm speaking to you. It was the obvious one.
Which will keep people waiting. Just play the music. Play the music.
I mean, to be fair, his name's probably in the title of the episode anyway.
Oh, they'll know. You should hide it.
Today we are joined by Matt from Pink Solitaire / Heartlands.
Yay!
How's it going, Matt?
Hello. It's all good. Yeah, it's not too bad. It's been hectic day, but then still good day. Or hectic days are good days.
I feel you. Yeah. I feel you. All week, actually. The day has been Monday to Friday. One day.
Yeah, yeah. Just one 24-hour slot, you know, yeah. The whole week.
And one way I could do with another couple hours of this week and equally, please go away this week.
Yeah. I know that feeling. So, yeah.
Here we are.
Matt, we had you on the show last August, I think it was.
I can't remember that far back.
For Pride in the Yard.
Oh,
Matt was on Pride in the Yard.
That was a good one.
Yeah,
good episode. Enjoyed that. Didn't rain either.
Which was also good. Yes.
Certainly takes back. Back to summer, the good times.
I miss the sun. So at the time you were telling me about the community hub that you were working in, the research that you were doing. So how's that all gone? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, it's quite an exciting time. I think at the time I was saying it's the sort of first in-person sort of study we've done since sort of pre-COVID, which is quite exciting.
Also 40 years ago, pre-COVID.
Prehistoric times. that was really exciting to sort of get people back out together. And we sort of ran that through till... Well, August was sort of launch date of it, sort of quite exciting time, and then through till November, just sort of asking community, you know, a community hub, what do you feel it could look like? I think at that point, people were starting to see that, you know, things, you know, the world still exists, you know, things can be real in the future. We got some really good sort of responses, really good feedback on it, and particularly, you know, those that are living, you know, rural Perthshire as well, that, you know, they want to see a space, and they, you know, understand the fact that, you know, maybe more centric, but then, you know, what's potential options, you know, when you live rurally, is it possible to do more pop-up things, more things mobile, that sort of thing. We had quite a range of responses, really good. So that sort of came up at the end of November. So the report's sort of out on the Heartland website now. We'll come up to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. It was sort of really good to sort of have all that sort of happening and make it feel a bit more real that, you know, things can happen in person. Besides Omicron, you know, that's really good, it's really exciting, and sort of all the support from all the groups and all the organizations, obviously, the sort of funding from the council we have, that was really well appreciated, really well, you know, supported as well, which is really good.
Mm-hmm. So, did you get a lot of sort of new ideas you hadn't thought of from that session, from that idea of putting it out there? What do you want?
Yeah, it was actually quite surprising because a lot of the ideas came from the Prism group at Perth High School.
All right.
So it's actually a lot of the younger people we actually spoke to had a lot of ideas, and we actually got them to produce Lego models of the pub themselves. Yeah.
Amen.
Of the Death Star, but we couldn't build that.
So I think there was one, like a rainbow... like a sort of machine to make like rainbows. But it was like one of the slot machines.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It was free. But you basically got three slots right and you got a rainbow up.
Nice.
So quite a few like out there ideas. But again, they had really good ideas in terms of how it'd be laid out, in terms of actually making it a safe space. So you have sort of social cafe space. And then keeping in mind, you know, that sort of might be quite a loud area. And then you had a lot more sort of talk around a sort of quieter area elsewhere in the sort of space as well. So we had like all these sort of three Lego models. I had all these three Lego models, and it was really interesting to sort of hear their ideas. I think we had 20 minutes, which we thought, you know, producing a whole Lego pile out of that would be no time at all. But yeah, they, you know, came up with some really good ideas really quickly, which is really good. So yeah, but beyond that, you know, we heard a lot of, you know, people say that, you know, they'd be looking, you know, not necessarily a space that's too hidden away, you know, accessible space, somewhere that they can just sort of be themselves, somewhere that, you know, not too obscure to kind of find in a way, and that's something that we're still sort of exploring at the minute in terms of somewhere that's quite accessible.
The Debenhams building, that's maybe a bit big.
got our eyes, you know, on it, but yeah, that's in terms of, you know, what we've seen in other spaces, other hubs elsewhere, it's maybe a little bit on the big side, unless anyone else wants to move in with us.
Collaborative journey, I think that one, all these different floors, you know.
So no, it's still sort of in the works around looking around, but again, you know, this thing with, you know, post-COVID world and everything, that, you know, high streets now, you know, not just Perth, you know, quite a lot of places are looking, you know, more bare than ever, and actually the perfect opportunity in a way to, you know, help bring the community back together, help, you know, see high streets more as a sort of community space to, you know, things for more things to happen, you know, and I think that's quite an exciting time.
And whether people like it or not, high streets are changing. That is a fact. You know, we can't harp back 20 years ago and say, well, it's not like it was. Well, nothing's like it was. We can't really go down that route. We have to see what's coming and change, and we all have to change in order.
Whilst apologising to Woolworths campaigners, and not as many round these
things,
but
so have you got a short list made up of where could be possible? I don't want to.
We have a collection of. So we do have stashed away somewhere a collection of you know, photos we take along the way. I'm probably the weirdo that's going to appear in a newspaper at some point that takes photos of empty buildings in Perth, because that's what I spend half my time doing it.
I've heard about you.
So I did get some strange looks doing that. Some of the buildings, you know, look a little bit pokey, maybe not the sort of space you'd, you know, admire in that way, but, you know, there's plenty of potential, and, you know, upcycling, there's plenty of potential, you know, refurbing places. So, you know, there's nothing out of the question in a way that we've sort of got in mind. I think the place, the hive that Pink Soul Tie is involved with, you know, sort of built from, you know, through lockdown as well, that's sort of been ex-textile store. So there's, you know, lots of different ways you can do it, lots of different ways you envision it. And, you know, whether it moves from like one, like a commercial space into that sort of community space, you know, all the options, you know, there are a lot of options there. Really.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you know, like Perth Autism Support have recently moved into a new building as well. So their old one's sitting ready, I assume, for something else. And it's interesting that even someone that's been that well established in Perth were looking for something else as well, you know. I think there's plenty of options out there. It's just find the right price point and the right, you know, size and all that to fit all needs, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah,
including your rainbow fruit machine. So what's your time scale? I mean, I hate to say, you know, no pressure. I'm just wondering what's your intended time scale for all this to go ahead?
So when we first started the study online, you know, back in the dreaded days of 2020, all of that, we thought it'd be over by 2021. That didn't happen either. But yeah, we had a new sort of study then, sort of November 2020, and that was sort of, we were saying then, about 18 months, which when you think about it is a month from now.
Wow, are you saying you're not meeting that deadline?
Yeah, we're probably a little bit having to push things back a little bit. But, you know, we will use that C-word excuse that, you know, COVID did scupper things, and, you know, that we did, you know, have to sort of further the study a little bit more. So, you know, even then, looking, you know, the hive, looking at Four Pillars in Aberdeen, for example, sort of recently opened their hub. It usually is about an sort of 18 month to 2 year sort of process. With that though, you know, think example with the hive, you know, you've even had sort of more just structural issues with it as well. And it's sort of all those things that come with a lovely looking building that then, you know, you look deeper, more ingrained in it.
Don't scratch
then
too hard on the surface.
So you sort of have to, you know, find things like that and overcome them as well and sort of find solutions to it. So again, it's sort of finding a pristine building that was built, you know, back in the 70s or back in the 60s, that's never going to fall apart, and you know that's never going to happen either. So it's just sort of finding that through and finding your way with it as well. And it's all that experience that I think between, you know, quite a large number now of, you know, the LGBT community that have sort of experienced that, and they have found, you know, venues that work, you know, even if it's, you know, just event spaces, for example, and venues that don't, and, you know, that's a learning curve in a way, certainly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's all time as well, of course. All of that takes time to find, to narrow down, to figure it out. And I suppose you must have quite a good imagination for walking into a building like that and going, right, this could be here and that could be there. Is that fair to say?
Quite interesting, because we've sort of in the meantime to all this, we have just sort of launched a new pop-up hub.
Right.
So we sort of took the chance literally within sort of 3 weeks, really. So we sort of saw the space. It's like a former registrar's office in Perth, and
they've just
moved out of there, and we just, you know, got shown around and everything, and sort of said, yeah, it's, you know, these couple of rooms and toilet, the kitchen stuff, you know, you could have stuff happening in here. And we sort of took the chance, and, you know, 2 weeks in, we're all sort of, you know, carting stuff up in our cars and everything, and sort of moving everything in there. So it's been quite a sort of hasty sort of move. And then sort of even then, it's sort of having that imagination, sort of thinking out, you know, the layout in your head, even for like small, like the marriage room there that we've got, even just sort of thinking how that would all be laid out. So I think with that, you know, we have had in mind, you know, about accessibility and stuff, and, you know, what is it in terms of customer journeys, you know, what's the first thing that they see? What's the first experience they have? But
the big reception room.
But this is the thing as well, that, you know, it's, you know, you can walk into some spaces and you have that sort of immediate barrier, particularly for, you know, the LGBT community, that they want to be able to access a space where they feel welcome, they feel, you know, able to be themselves straight away. And having someone that's going to, you know, question or query right there, it's not necessarily going to help them, you know, feel that space accessible to them. And whether it's, you know, having a sort of cafe space there, the sort of entrance bit, and then having, you know, staff welcome there, like any other cafe would sort of thing, then that's a bit more welcoming, a bit more relaxing environment, that sort of thing.
Open door policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's sort of, you know, make it quite a relaxing, quite a welcoming environment in a way for people. And that's something that, you know, I'd always sort of considered and have customer journey tick in the back of my mind. You know, I've had that in previous jobs as well, you know, as a student as well. So it's sort of like the student mindset. So sort of taking that on board and sort of thinking about customer journeys. I say all that was for individual campuses, so that made it more challenging. So yeah, sort of thinking about that, you know, the whole way that people use the space and what they sort of do in that space. But then thinking, you know, about the different, you know, sexual orientation, think about different gender identities and how they may access that space differently depending on their specific needs, that sort of thing. But then, you know, what services, what support do you then have within that space?
Yeah.
And how are they then sort of catering? How are they offering their services about? Is that something they do on a particular basis, a booking basis, for example? Or is that something that they're there and it's a bit more sort of a drop-in option, that sort of thing? So it's sort of thinking about all these different things about how people use the space and what experience they'll get from that. I say all of that, then you've got to keep reviewing that at the same time.
Course, and especially with COVID, as you've already said, you know, that COVID changed everything, and not COVID will change everything as well. And it won't go back to how things were, I don't think. We'll never get right back to where we were. I don't think, you know, everyone's not ever going to feel comfortable walking about with no mask on, for example. You know, I was at something the other week there in a restaurant, and it was really quite tight knit, and that felt weird. Yet, what, 2.5 years ago, sorry, 40 years ago, that didn't feel so weird. And we're in Glasgow in a restaurant I won't name for any particular reason, but I just didn't feel right. You know, you're almost nudging people trying to get out of the place. The chairs were in the way.
Yeah.
And it's, how do you accommodate that? You know, you need to be close enough to feel close knit and to feel like everyone's involved, but far enough away that people aren't worried about coming in. You know, it's tricky.
There's another side to that as well, though. So I was at a gig last night in Glasgow. I was front of the crowd. Nobody had masks on after we'd got in, had our COVID passports and stuff. But then after that, you've got this thing in your head. You know, I did a flow test this morning. I'll do one tomorrow. And you've got, it's, even when you try to relax and just enjoy something, it's still there. It's still
banging the back of your head going, oh, you, what are you doing?
You're infectious. You're diseased, you know. But it was a great gig, so I don't care.
You got over it pretty quick. But no, it's a really tricky thing, I think, to and especially, as you're saying, that the orientations and the different identities and all that, how do you encompass all that and know that you are as well? You know, that's it. How do you do that? Yeah, and actually, that's a great question. How do you do that?
It's a very tricky one almost, because there's certain identities, you know, that are still very much unspoken of. It's very sort of, you know, you do sometimes find that people identify in certain identities. are quite difficult almost to come by and hear their story and hear what they have to say, that sort of thing. Obviously, this year, sort of being Scotland, hear the stories, sort of had the benefit of, you know, being involved in that program as well. And that sort of helped in terms of, you know, actually listening to both the stories that appeared on that, but also, you know, hearing people's stories and taking the time to listen to people and, you know, the journeys have been through, that sort of thing. So I think only through, and this is the thing, very much more about, you know, hearing it straight from the horse's mouth in terms of experience and in terms of what their life has been like. For example, I was talking to someone the other day that's polyamorous, and hearing all about polyamorous and multiple relationships and all that sort of stuff. It was the first person I've ever met that's polyamorous. And it's, you know, things like that, that then I went into like the survey of running as part of the Heartlands program and adjusted the question around who you live with to include partners with the brackets S, just in case you may have, you know, people that live with multiple partners, thing. So it's sort of making all those little adjustments sort of along the way. I think one of the things that I've heard mixed, you know, opinions on is around the whole, you know, plethora of flags that you've got now and, you know, all the different ways and all, you know, you look just at, let's say, Lesbian Visibility Day. You've got four or five flags that identify lesbians, but in different lights, different modes, different. And it's very, you know, it can be quite confusing to try and encompass all of those into one specific brand. So the easiest way to think about that is try not to use those flags to make associations, because you will annoy at least one person. And it's just those sort of things, you know, trying to minimize, you know, minimize those sort of, you know, frictions between different communities. And, you know, as bad as it may sound, you know, there is still friction between members of the LGBT plus community.
Well, I was actually going to ask that as well. You know, like, I think, I can't remember who I had this discussion with. It was maybe in the pub. I was probably not sober either, but we're talking about the fact of, people feel the need to belong, but they don't want to belong too much. Yeah. They want to have this little group of people so they're individual. Mm. And it's very much a human nature thing. It's not, you know, it's not down to any particular anything. It's just people seem to feel that way. And I've seen it in the biking community, motorbiking community, where, oh, you ride an upright bike and I ride a sports bike and therefore we're different. It's like, ah, but actually we're all just putting ourselves at risk in a bike, aren't we? and it is. I was actually going to ask that because I don't have any inside knowledge of that stuff at all. So, and there is friction within, or there can be.
Yeah, there can be. I think, you know, the prime example of that is pride. They, you know, there can be quite, you know, type friction, not necessarily local prides in Perthshire, but I think, you know, if you look at the whole sort of pride, you know, all the different events happen with pride. London Pride is a really prime example of this, where it's become much more of a sort of, you know, I think as Ray Wolford sort of did an event with us at the Hive a couple of weeks ago, and that was all talking about the whole, what pride has become in terms of more of a festival now that, you know, used to be a protest sort of thing. So the whole reclaim sort of movement now around pride and the fact that, you know, this is what it's for. And actually I've got quite a number of friends, like generally even straight friends, that will say, oh yeah, you know, I've been to that pride, yeah, it's a great sort of time, that sort of thing, treating it like it was a festival.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of understand that, yes, you know, I've sort of grown up in a lifetime where, you know, it has sort of been perceived as a festival. The first pride I went to was only in 2016. So again, that sort of whole movement around, you know, how we see pride, that sort of thing, has created those sort of frictions. I think, you know, it has, you know, you get charities that come along the way as well. So you got, like, let's say the RGB Alliance claiming charity status, and that whole argument there that, you know, they're very very exclusionary to trans people, for example, a very transphobic charity. And that's something that, again, it's always sort of a tackle within their own community that's been quite difficult. And for example, different identities. So for example, I identify as pansexual. I'm very open about how I identify as pansexual. The minute I sort of explain it to people, they make the association that it's bi. Right. It's not bi at all. You know, it's very, you know, it can be quite different to bi, but it's that perception of, you know, what people feel, you know, or they associate that with being bi because they know more about what bi is. Mm-hmm. It's all those sort of little things that you sort of, little niggles that you sort of come across. Yes, that little niggle irritates me quite a bit, but it's just overcoming those sort of barriers and overcoming those sort of, you know, people assume it's one thing when actually educating people and saying, you know, it's something else, you know.
It's always about education, though, isn't it? Absolutely. At the end of the day, yeah. Everything is about education at the end of the day. And it's about, I always said to my daughter growing up, this thing I read in Games Master a long time ago. Remember Dominic Diamond? Remember him? So he said the phrase in one of the magazines that it was about GTA and the fact that GTA was bad and people were accusing the game of making people violent. And he said, you know, the bottom line is that people you know, attack what they don't understand. They fear what they don't understand. And that's what it is. It's down to the whole fear. It's not actually, it's their own fear as well. It's not even, you know, it's not fear of the other person or whatever. It's just their own insecurities and their own fear coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's another element to that, which is fear of asking.
Oh,
fear of saying, explain to me what pansexual is and how it's different. Because I don't really know much
about it.
Well,
I think Matt's about to tell us.
Yeah.
He's lined himself up to tell us, and I think he needs to tell the...
But it's having... tip my tongue, yeah.
But it's being comfortable in yourself to say to someone, look, this might be a bit of an intrusive question, but could you explain that to me in such a way that, you know, because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's having... So there's that side of the fear as well, where it's not an aggressive kind of fear.
It's more just, should I or shouldn't I ask this question? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're on a podcast, so Matt, fire away.
Symphonic sexuality. So it's something that I only really started to identify as in probably 2016. It's only through a conversation where I was sort of questioning the whole am I gay, am I bi, that sort of battle of my mind sort of thing, that it took a while to sort of adjust to, you know, how my identity, you know, I don't want to say was selected, but then, you know, sort of what sort of was in my mind at the time. So only through took through sort of breaking it down, explaining it to someone else, that they, you know, opened up to me and said about pansexuality and sort of said, you know, this could potentially be you. I'm not going to say that, you know, I chose to be that on the day, but then, you know, I did sort of think about it a bit more, to think about, you know, the whole concept in my head, read up a bit on it as well, sort of learnt my own sort of mindset of it as well. And that's how I sort of then came to be like, okay, yes, I'm pansexual. Pansexuality is essentially where you don't necessarily, you know, you're not attracted to a particular gender. And that's when you get those sort of judgments of, oh yeah, it's bi then. That's, you know, where that sort of comes in. But what I'd sort of say then is it's not about, you know, particularly appearance, not about personality. It could be one specific thing that you sort of feel towards an individual, regardless completely of their gender. It encompasses non-binary, it encompasses trans as well. And it's something that, you know, it's more that sort of attraction to a person because of a typical thing at first, and then you sort of build that sort of picture in your mind of sort of who that person could be. Then you get to know that person, and then get to know, you know, whether that might be the right sort of person, if they sort of then have those sort of similar traits to what you had in mind, in your mind at the time. It does still get that confusion though. I do still understand it, and I'm still very much open to have that sort of, you know, educate people a bit more around, you know, pansexuality and how it is different from bi. It does come under the sort of bi plus flag, which I think then again people do get a bit confused about how it's different. So yeah, it's sort of one of those things that you do sort of come across every so often. And you know, I'm very much more open about being pans because, you know, it's not got that sort of education around it. Again, people ask me what a job is, and it's pretty much the case that they'll make that association of, oh, okay, so he works for an LGBT charity, so that's probably where this is leading.
So, yeah, it sounds like, and maybe I'm just picking this up really simplistically, but bisexual is just male or female, whereas pansexual is like the open-minded. You are just...
Yeah, you take the first part of it. So you got sort of the bi-binary, and pans is all, essentially. Yeah, so that's the easiest way to separate it,
And it just sounds so open-minded.
Oh, yeah, it does. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear the explanation with the fear of going, oh, why did you not know that? I don't know.
And that is the thing, that there is a lack of education. We grew up thinking, in the time we grew up, it was just like, you know, you like boys or you like girls. And that was it. And there was only two, really, well, three options if you like both. But there was only really two options. And there's not.
And you had to fall into those gaps as well, as a thing, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I look at my daughter who's 15 now, and it's she's so much more open to all of this. And it is an age thing. Of course it is. It's a generation thing. I always akin it to even racism, where, you know, it's instilled. It is instilled in the older generation. And until that goes away, you know, I think the next generation being raised in a way that it'll be far more in the open and far more open to anyone to be whatever they want to be.
I think in the last sort of, you know, decade as well, of, you know, discovering firstly my own identity, but then realizing there's a whole community of these people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember sort of growing up in Devon, that, you know, as the next sort of person I knew to me that, you know, was LGBT, not even I sort of understood that concept at the time, but, you know, was, you know, 12, 15 miles away. So even then, that was quite difficult to feel there's any sense of community, anyone sort of had a shared mindset to me. And it's only sort of since sort of leaving school that I found that, you know, people have opened up to me a lot more, sort of knowing that I'd sort of come out of school and actually say to me, you know, they've adopted the whole I'm queer because I'm not sure in a way, or question my identity, that sort of thing. So it's quite interesting now that that sort of changed as well over time. But I think even now, you know, since that sort of decade changed, you sort of see that, you know, a lot of the younger people now, even younger, you know, than I was, I hear a sort of 9-10 year old now that are sort of, you know, adopting that queer, you know, almost reclaiming queer in a way, and reclaiming that sort of as a positive thing, which is really good to see. But also a lot more that, you know, identifying as non-binary, as transgender, and also those that don't feel that, you know, they're on the gay, bi, lesbian spectrum. They could be anywhere in that spectrum, any, you know, adopt any flag almost. And that's sort of really good to see, really powerful to see. I think it's certainly changed even, you know, the last sort of 5-6 years or going to uni, the whole culture of uni changed in the three years I was there. And I was quite involved in society then, and that sort of seeing that whole change of, you know, all the different sort of people that came along, and actually opening up the conversation to, you know, straight allies around the university, you know, opening up social occasions for them as well, and making sure, you know, that conversations being had with friends, having, you know, conversations with course mates, that sort of thing, just to open up the conversation a lot more, and that really helped. So I think it's certainly transformed a lot in the last, you know, decade. It's been quite rapid. And I think that's almost something that is used a bit of a decoy, that it scares people in a way that, you know, things have changed that rapidly and people just aren't prepared for that sort of change so quickly, you know.
And things have changed, I mean, massively, you know, like I've seen it, and with kids, my, you know, I've got kids of the age where you're sort of like, how do you know about that stuff? And they just do. It's not, they're not being taught it per se. It's just, it's in their circles, you know, they know. There's options. They know the door's open, I think, is a bigger thing as well. It's not about, I've said that to my kids, it's not about deciding right now. You're not of an age to need to know. You just need to know there's options. And there's things out there that are more than what you said earlier, Stoby, boy or girl, what takes your fancy, sort of thing. You know?
Absolutely.
It's hugely invigorating to see.
Yeah, and even at a sort of simpler level, so my youngest is nearly 6, and like she'll say, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example now, like boys, she's like, boys can wear pink if they want, because, you know, they can, and because someone else had said boys can't wear pink, she's like, but they can wear what they want. And it's like, she's 5 and she gets it.
Yeah, exactly.
And growing up, I'd never wear a pink t-shirt, but I actually make a point of just doing things like that now, to just be like,
just to mix it up
but
a little
even
bit.
Then that almost feels like you shouldn't have to do that as well. No, but we're just trying to find that balance now, you know, of,
well, I think it has to swing the other way for a while in order to bring it back in again, doesn't it? Because it's been a horrible time, I would argue, you know. And there's so many people that I know have met and have talked to who would have been, or think or believe they would have been a lot happier had they known about this stuff early. Because it's interesting, even you're saying where you were, you grew up, you didn't know because there was no one else to talk to about it. And, you know, everyone around you is probably going, boy or girl, take decision time. And you're like, I don't know.
I think for me, it was percentage. On that percentage scale. Yeah. And for me, obviously, at that point,
on
it was
a scale
changing,
of one to gay, how gay are you? and it's not right that that's a thing either, you know, especially at the young age. And, you know, it's great to see that door is now much more open. I'm not saying it's fully open, but it's open enough that we can have this discussion on a podcast in the middle of Perth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing to sort of say in there as well was just around, you know, what people do in terms of being visible like that, helping to break down those stereotypes. And it does come down to a whole confidence thing, I think, as well, that, you know, it's not possible to go out wearing a full progress rainbow flag, whatever.
No.
And, you know, you will get some funny looks still. And, you know, society not quite that stage. I'm not sure if it will be at any point soon. But,
give,
you know, there are sort of, you know, subtle ways that you can do it. So, you know, for example, I sort of make every effort where possible. I will just decide one day, you know, okay, today's gonna be a rainbow day, I'm gonna wear a rainbow belt, I'm gonna wear pink socks, I'm gonna wear my little rainbow pin badge, whatever. It's just gonna be something with association to rainbow and just be visible for that day.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's giving people that sort of feeling that, you know, they can do that at whatever point sort of suits them in a way, even in workplace as well, sort of having those sort of conversations. It's really sort of good to see the amount of, you know, work networks now that you get with LGBT support, in terms of representation. I think that's sort of really good, really powerful to see that, you know, there are businesses out there, quite, you know, large corporate businesses out that are now suiting, like, supporting that as well.
And putting a nod to the fact that they acknowledge it's a thing and it needs sorted. It needs to be accepted and brought into that workplace because, you know, it's got to be done. You're right about the whole... you know, you can't just kick down the door and go, "Hi, everyone, we're all gay," and that's just going to put people's heckles up. And and you know, we want it to be like that. There's plenty of people that want it to be like that, but there has to be a way to do it where we don't scare the crap out of you know, people who haven't quite got around to accepting it. And it's an unfortunate case of how it is, but it's time. It's all time. People need time. It's as simple as that. And you know, I was out probably about 3 or 4 years ago with a gay friend from Fife, and he was holding hands with his boyfriend in the middle of the street with a big chain around his neck, and he did get some funny looks. And I'm walking with him going, "That's really, I mean, whatever year it was, so it was 2018, 2019, you're still like, really, people, you know, like, you've never seen a gay couple before," but they have, they just haven't seen them be openly gay on the high street before. That was the difference, you know. So it's really good to know that things like Pride come along, and you know, Magneto can walk down the high street and support all this, and you know, and actually bring it to the forefront of it's okay.
Yeah,
it is okay.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful to see. Almost got quite a lot of, you know, photos collected. Obviously, you know, 40 years ago, pre-COVID.
Oh yeah, when I was a laddie.
Yeah, really powerful to see, you know, the number of, you know, straight allies that also come out for Pride as well. And, you know, them demonstrating. It was a really good photo. We got a couple of versions of them. Essentially, this mum that made a like banner just to go above her, saying this mum gives free rainbow hugs.
And
essentially like a supportive parent, and you know, writing in the rainbow, you know, the supportive queer parent.
Well, it starts really at home, doesn't it? Let's face it, for everyone, it starts at home.
I think the best one I had was telling my aunt. So my aunt, I didn't really have much contact with them. It's sort of the aunt that you had, you know, occasional catch-ups with every, you know, 5, 6, 10 years sort of thing. And they were sort of still living back in my hometown, so I hadn't seen them in quite a while. And I hadn't actually told them anything for quite a while. And I was at a wedding with them, and I think I'd ordered, I think we're drinking like wine or spritz or something, champagne maybe, and it was like middle of summer, and it was like a marquee sort of set up with like a garden outside, but still outside. And I think I just went, I think I turned first of all, and they're like, "Oh, can we get you any drinks?" For some reason, I don't know why it came out of my mouth, I had one glass at this point and said, "Yeah, can I get a bottle of red?" Never drink red wine. anyway, so sort of bought out a bottle of red, completely forgot at that point that it was a bottle of red. Still, you know, only one glass. But then this wasp appeared. I massive hate wasps, like big time. Not sure
anything. Me too. I'm on that one.
We're with you.
But I just like did this whole sort of parade of, you know, running away and, you know, screaming, you know, throwing my wine everywhere, you know, the whole bottle. And it was only sort of later, so I had a conversation with them, like, "Oh, are you sort of seeing anyone right now? You got a girlfriend?" And I'm like, "Well, actually..."
Paul, we're like, on the subject.
and their response was literally, "Yeah, I sort of presumed that the wasp earlier." So
I'm not dating the wasp.
So no, that was really powerful in a way, and it was really sort of good to have that sort of response, and the fact that they were absolutely fine with it. I think the main concern actually was, you know, did my mum know? We sort of lost my mum about a couple of years before that.
Right.
So again, that was something that has really sort of helped. You know, I think I was quite surprised, you know, that I found out sort of later on that they were quite big around Christianity, but even then it's quite more about the inclusive church sort of thing. It's quite empowering almost that happened.
Liberating to a degree as well, I'd assume, to be able to just say that to someone that you might have had problems saying it to before. And that's, you know, I never want to get to that stage with my kids, you know, like that they're afraid to tell me something like that, you know. I'd just be such a, it's a generational thing again though, especially coming from my generation. I'm 21 obviously, but you know, I'm in my 40s, and you know, my parents would never, no. You know, I'd probably be kicked out for a statement like that. You know, that's just how, but again, it's a generational thing. I don't blame them for that. That's how they were brought up. And this is what I'm saying. The generations have to there'll be a level of acceptance, but you'll never get the grandparents' level of stuff all to accept this is a thing now, you know?
It doesn't mean they won't in individual cases. No, there'll be a lot
but
a lot of them are set
thing,
in their ways. Yeah.
And a lot of them will be like, you can do it, but go and do it behind closed doors. Cheers. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, not necessarily so much in this country, although it's there, but in other countries, especially like South America, you've got that generation are still in charge.
Yes.
Exactly. You know? And that makes it really hard. Really they have to work hard on their own mindset to drive it.
And want to, and that's the problem half the time. They don't want to. There's nothing in it for them.
I think there are cases that I do hear, those of the old generation that actually they've sort of spent a lot of their lives, hidden away in a sense. Mm-hmm. They've sort of hidden their identity. They knew from, maybe a younger age, but never really addressed it and never really had those sort of conversations, never really opened up about it and had almost heteronormative life in a way that, they've had kids, they've had a partner, they've had, all the sort of norms that you'd expect in a traditional sort of life when actually we don't necessarily now live in a traditional society anyway, there's so much change going on.
And fast, as we said, very fast.
So I think now that's, they've sort of taken that chance. I think, in a way, COVID has sort of helped people open up a lot more about this in a way. Conversations have around, how people feel, how they're sort of responding to this. And it has sort of brought a lot of that stuff to the surface for people. And they have actually come out later and also got support from that. I know enough people sort of come out as either trans and been supported by their partner. They are still very much together and they are sort of working through that in a way, but in a positive way, which is really good to see. Likewise, I know someone that, runs a youth group. They themselves are in their sort of 60s, 70s and have only recently come out of non-binary.
Wow.
Because of the, empowerment from young people. So again, that's sort of really encouraging to see that all sort of...
But that's what the community's for, isn't it? Is to drive that forward, that it is okay. And there are people like you out there who will understand and what will get what you're going through and what you've hidden away for all this time. And, I do see a lot more couples of all sorts walking down the high street hand in hand because they're much less afraid to do it than they were 10 years ago. And that's great to see that. They've got their colourful hair, they're holding hands, they've got their flags attached to them. And for the most part, I don't see them getting bothered. There will be some tool somewhere that will make a comment, but I think they're just like, laugh it off and move on because we're somewhere else now, And it's great to see. It's absolutely fab to see.
It's that changing mindset of caring less about what other people think.
Because that was
such an inhibitor growing up, was worried about what people were thinking for everything you did. Will I kick that ball or will they laugh at me if it goes wrong? Even just simple things like that, down to really serious issues, really serious sort of things that can impact on your mental health, impact on how you are, and I think people do just, they are starting to be more aware of, well, I don't care what others think. There is a movement of that.
Long may it continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bring it on.
We clearly don't. That's why we do this. Speaking of podcasting, though, so part of the community work that you're doing, you've got a bunch of workshops coming up, Create Together.
So it's actually part of a wider, part of a wider program, Rainbow Heartland. So, we've got quite a few sort of different things happening. So, sort of Create Together is sort of sub-brand of that. We've also got Get Togethers, Walk Togethers, Explore Togethers. We've just got like experiences together, that sort of thing. Rainbow Heartland is essentially a new program where it's helping to bring people together, particularly in the sort of post-COVID world that, a lot of people felt isolated, particularly those that, don't feel that they can, be open and kind of quite big and bold, like Pride, that sort of thing, but actually feel they could maybe connect with other community that may be going through similar things and similar journeys. And that's something that we're sort of quite keen to make sure that people can come and feel that they can be together, that sort of thing. We are keeping very much sort of COVID aware on it as well, in terms of, we want to do as much as we can in person. We did put a delay on it because of Omicron and everything that happened in December. And we're still a bit sort of worried sort of until about mid-January about how things would look. And obviously the outlook from that point was a bit more positive. So we thought, okay, let's just continue with it. Just keep COVID in the back of our minds, that sort of thing. We try not to go too COVID heavy and turn the messaging on it if we can. Because everyone's knackered by that by now. It's been nearly 2 years since all that happened.
Oh, we're so done.
We're sort of, whilst we're keeping sensitive about it, we are aware that, it's something that, it's something to adapt to in a way, and it's something to sort of how can we still help people come together and, you know, feel that they can be themselves in a sense. And, you know, it's like opening up like the pop-up space, for example. You know, it's a space that people can come to. It's not hidden away, but it's at least sort of just away from like wider society, the wider hustle and bustle of the high street. And it's just a way to, you know, help people sort of come into a space and just have those sort of conversations, maybe even for the first time for some people. And, you know, there's plenty of inclusive businesses that I hear of that, you know, people have gone into that shop and it's the first person they've ever told who work there that they are LGBT. And that just happens to be the first person they've ever come out to. They might have known them for 20 minutes, but they still just talk to them because they recognize that they're an inclusive business. And it's really great to see, you know, the amount of, you know, safe community shops, the amount that, you know, those that display like the rainbow badge and everything in the shop front. It's just really great to see that. I think there's a new program from All Strong Scotland, which is around LGBT inclusion as well, which is really good. And, you know, it's just a way of, you know, what can we do with the Rainbow Heartlands program, particularly for those in rural communities as well, and what can we do to either bring them into Perth or focus on what's going on out in rural communities and actually help bring people together in that way. So there's quite a lot of opportunities with it, and quite a lot happening. It's all a bit, you know, not too manic, but manic
enough. I'm not going to use the word overwhelmed. But,
but no, it's really sort of good to see, you know, people back out again in person.
Oh, yeah.
Feel that they can, you know, openly talk about things, you know, in a inclusive venue, in a welcoming space, that sort of thing.
And in many ways as well, it's a great opportunity for you guys to eke this in, because you're not going to have this sudden rush that you might have had, you know, in normal times, whatever that means. You know, as I said before, folk are starting to come out the woodwork a little bit after COVID. So you've got this lovely run-up time where you can start small, work it up to something great, you know, and take your time to do that without having to drown in what's going on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's something that, you know, people are a bit more sensitive around that sort of stuff as well, that, you know, they'd like to be able to maybe come to stuff maybe just on a monthly basis or just every couple of weeks, and just sort of have the opportunity. And this is one thing as well, is, you know, giving people new opportunities that they might not have tried stuff before, allowing people to try new things. It's like, for example, the podcast session that, you know, out of COVID, people might wish to sort of develop their own podcast or working from home a lot more.
If only you knew someone that could teach that.
Yes.
But you don't, so we're doing it instead.
So yeah, it's sort of really, you know, really good to see, you know, opportunities sort of come together. And at the same time, it's, you know, making those connections in the community. You know, there's several conversations you can have in one day that could lead to, you know, the next thing as well. You know, for example, I was speaking to someone today at the Cranach Centre, and they were saying it'd be really good to get, you know, more things happening in Highland Perthshire. Let's work together. It's those sort of conversations you'd like to have and like to continue.
And in post-COVID, you can have these conversations face-to-face, and it's so much nicer.
Well, I remember you saying a few months ago that you bumped into someone in the street from another business, and you got more done in that 10-minute conversation than we ever did
in Zoom. I think we need to wrap this up because it's been a while. But actually, I think the big question, Matt, is if there's people out there listening, how do they find out about everything you've been talking about? Hit us with it.
Yeah, sure. So we've got an online digital hub, about one of the only aspects we have online, because, you know, the internet still exists even post-COVID, I'm afraid. But yeah, it's heartlands.rgbt. We've got a few other domains out there. If you don't like the word heartlands, you can enter perth.rgbt, perthshire.rgbt, or kinross.rgbt. All takes you to the same place, same information, don't worry.
You!
So yeah, that's all online. So yeah, the main website is heartlands.rgbt. On there, you'll find all the activities, local organisations, local support services, local groups that come together. You'll also find, you know, what we're talking about at the start about the hub as well as, you know, the pop-up space, the survey. That's just everything sort of on that digital hub space. You can also have a look on social media. It's a hashtag Rainbow Heartlands, and all the sort of updates will come through on that as well. We also have an Eventbrite, which, again, click on the activities page on the website and that'll show all the events that are coming up through our Eventbrite as well.
Lovely.
Including on March the 23rd.
Oh, selfish. Selfish plug coming here. Go for it.
6 o'clock, it'll be Create Together, and it'll be the podcast workshop with ourselves.
Hey!
We need to plan what we're doing for that.
Yeah, we will. We will have done it by then. It's fine. It's fine.
And whereabouts is this? This is in the hub space as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's a new Heartlands pop-up hub. So we're just off Tay Street. So if you look out for the rainbow bunting, It's changed from pink bunting to rainbow bunting because we thought, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I say that the pink bunting didn't, so, you know, it didn't last so well in the weather. So that's the reason for that. But we'll keep the rainbow bunting as an excuse.
the die ran.
So yeah, you look out for the rainbow bunting. So it's up between sort of 11:15 on Tay Street. And it's just through a little gateway, and just look out for the rainbow bunting. We're open there Tuesday to Friday. So it's Tuesday, Wednesday, it's 12 to 4. We're open 10 to 1 on Thursdays and 10 to 4 on Fridays. We're also taking group bookings for us. You've got a little group you might want to meet there. It's open anytime weekdays till 8 p.m. Just drop us a message, hello at heartlands.rgbt. Make sure you say hello again, just because we like a lot of
hello. Hello, hello.
And yeah, just drop us a message on there if you want to meet you as your group or anything. And we're happy to sort of book you in. We're there till the 8th of April. That's a Friday at the minute. And, you know, you're welcome to just pop in, have a coffee, have a tea on us as well.
Oh, weirdo.
Little cheeky on the side.
Biscuits.
If you're on your lunch break or anything, just pop by and say hello to us. And yeah,
lovely.
As you do.
Right. Awesome. Well, Matt, you've been brilliant, absolutely brilliant, because you've saved us from talking. So everyone appreciates that.
Thank you so much for your time. Well.
No, thanks for coming along. Been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you on the workshop night.
Which only leaves us to say the usual stuff. Subscribe, like, and all the other stuff. Tell your friends. And if you've got anything going on, give us a shout on social media. We are all over the place. The Perth Podcast, Facebook, Instagram, other stuff.
So I can't decide if you've practiced that or you just want this over and done with.
Winging this.
Right, okay.
But no, look us up. If you've got an event on, tell us about it. We can't tell other people if you don't tell us.
Exactly.
Beyond that, episode 33, it's gone. Our work here, it is done.
Thanks for listening.
See ya. We'll be right back.